Today on ABCDTOS, Miri.
Welcome to ABC-TOS. There's no dash in there. What am I talking about? Let me take that
Mrs.
again.
Mrs. Dash.
Welcome to ABCDTOS, the only show on the internet that features both Star Trek and the alphabetical order of the episodes of the original series of Star Trek, from All Our Yesterdays to Wolf in the Fold. And I am Joe Mazel.
I'm Pete the Retailer.
I'm Tom Taylor.
And I'm John Engel.
And today we're discussing Miri.
Miri.
Okay, I got to tell you guys, I really was tempted to just open with a Jack A. Harry impersonation on that. Miri.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah, but I couldn't do it at the beginning. I thought it's best just to comment on it later. People will be really confused if I do it right at the up front.
Totally. Well, I think we can all agree the best part about Miri is there's nothing creepy about the episode at all.
Yeah, it's a pretty episode. Yeah. Very, it's easy on the nerves.
Really pretty.
Yeah, there's nothing that makes me uncomfortable.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Very pretty.
But we got Mr. Feel great about life.
But we got Mr. Lovey Dovey coming down to the planet, and you know,
I wonder if he's related to Mr. Howell and Mrs. Howell. Oh,
by marriage.
Is that a hyphenate? He's like yeah, I'm trying to
Luffy
figure out.
That doesn't make sense. Yeah.
This episode, the crew of the Enterprise doesn't seem nearly as excited as they should be about the fact that they found an exact duplicate Earth.
It's true.
Real unnecessary wrinkle there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hats on hats in this one.
Yeah. All right. Well, let me read the Google blurb so we can figure out what we're talking about. Kirk and a landing party discover a replica of Earth trapped in the year 1960 and inhabited only by children. After learning that a plague has wiped out all the adults, the crew fear that they will become the next victims of the disease. And they learn that fear is true.
Yeah. Fear established by getting the disease.
Right. Yeah, so they are receiving, they make a big deal out of like, it's an Earth-style distress signal, which is a funny thing that it's like not, I mean, I guess they mean like old Earth, you know, like sometimes, like if I say like a Roman
chariot.
Yeah, like you don't assume that I mean like, aqueducts. Oh yeah, I just went and got one today, you know, like.
Yeah, I just got run over by one.
Yeah. But yeah.
So what they mean is a radio signal.
I guess so.
It's like 1960s or
well, they have
television.
To be. They didn't have Uhura there to be like, I think they called it radio. Like, they didn't. They needed that.
Mm-hmm. They really didn't have Uhura. That
no, they had Farrell.
It was the first shock of the episode. Like, whoa, are you all right, Uhura?
Farrell, who just looks like he's like, is he on something? He's just kind of like,
Looks like he's about to burst into tears at any second. Yeah. It's like, what button does this do? Oh, geez. Oh, God. Don't make me go.
And yeah, they're doing they're scanning. They're like, that's weird. Like a well, there's a like I guess it's after the thing after the shortest little kind of
it
like
it was clobbering time.
It was the clobbering of times. It was the it's the shortest cold open kind of the entire series. I believe it's like a minute or something.
Very
they're
short.
Just like, wow, that's Earth.
Another Earth.
Ta-da.
That'll be interesting.
But then they, yeah, like there's a moment where they're like looking, they're like, okay, so you know, the distress signal, it's an Earth style distress signal, seems to be coming from the planet, and Spock is like, not a vessel. Like he says it in such a weird, it made me think of like Janet from The Good Place, like, not a girl. Like he says it in a not like it's nobody was asking, but he's like, not a vessel.
Yeah.
He also says it's spheroid shaped. Like
right.
It's on the monitor.
Oh, one
like,
of those planets.
Yeah. Right.
It's not he's not a flat planet. Just well, to could, make it know. Clear to the flat earthers in the bridge here. It's spheroid shaped.
And then they're like, well, exact replica of Earth. And I think it's in the captain's log. He's like, it seems impossible, but there it is. It's just like, that's as far as we're gonna explain it.
He's like, yeah. Somehow another Earth has emerged.
Yeah.
Yep, that is the exact continent of Africa. Yeah, yes. What can you do?
Somehow we've beamed down into the back lot of the studio. How is that? Like a 60s era Hollywood TV studio.
Mayberry. Exactly, yeah. Where that is.
It is Mayberry. Yeah.
It is mm-hmm. Mayberry, yeah.
Have they ever done that? You know, it seems like I don't know. David Gerald comes to mind because he's a goof, but like any one of those funny sci-fi writers, have they ever done a thing where like a basically, you know, the Enterprise or non-union equivalent, you know, beams down to a planet, but they beam down into a movie backlot. And so they're like, oh, this planet's so weird. And then like all of a sudden somebody's like, just, you know, like, cut. What the hell's going on here?
That Star Trek comic book that Joe, did you send me that? Somebody sent me a Star Trek comic book. And if it was you and I'm misremembering, I apologize. But somebody
a while ago.
And it was and I was sending you guys pictures of it, and that happens in that. Like for some reason they have, like two teams of people from the Enterprise have to go down to Earth in the past. And yeah, then Kirk and somebody else end up in a scene where they are filming a Roman thing with Roman chariots and stuff. So it's all ties together to this conversation. Mm. Yeah. It's weird.
Nice. I do. That should be used more.
But yeah, for a while, they're like, oh my gosh, the settings were wrong. We were in ancient Rome. Oh, wait, no, that guy's got jeans and a boom mic. Okay.
Godzilla.
Twisted Sister's playing doing a video. What's happening?
Yeah. I want to look up Mayberry for a second because I forgot that I looked up. Is this a, no, this is a genealogy page. When they're walking around, suddenly they're like, oh, look at this. It's like, you know, they have a whole thing where it's just like, oh, this looks like it was last, you know, somebody was last here in the 60s. And then they're like, Spock's looking at his thing. And he's like, mid 60s. Like, I feel like he should be like, it seems like they were last here in October of 1966. It's like, you know, it's like they're very...
I also do love, yes, it's the mid 60s. You can tell by the obvious livery stable sign.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, by the buildings that have been there probably since the 20s or 30s or something. Well,
but then it's, so it that's the thing, that it's the, well, I guess it's not, I don't know. It's supposed to be like, all right, it's the 60s, but people have been dead, the grown-ups have all been dead for like 300 years or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So but it's like, it should be like the 1660s.
Well, except the 60s they're referring to is when all the everybody died, right? Like when people were last developing this area, it was 1960 or whatever. There are a lot of like 1930s era cars around, it seems, or 40s. Yeah. But so then again, in the 1960, you probably did see a few. Like we still see cars from the 70s from time to time.
Mm.
So
well, again, not Earth.
No.
Not a vessel. But I wanted to check. I don't know Mayberry well enough to see if the one of the things that they walk around, they're like, oh, look at this weird old town. And one of the things, one of the storefronts or facades clearly says Biggs. And I was like, oh, blasted Biggs. Where are you? There you are.
Right there.
Which again feeds into the idea that George Lucas was just sitting around watching Star Trek. Yeah, Biggs. That's a good name.
Yeah. That's an idea.
The bonk droid was originally called a bonk bonk droid.
Or if you believe the subtitles, a bunk bunk droid.
Oh, really?
I had a lot of
I disagree.
Arguments with the closed captioning today. Because it had a lot of different things like that, where it was
bunk.
It said bunk bunk, and it said I don't know. I spent a lot of time parsing their kind of transcription of nya 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 nya. Like,
That's nya.
Yeah, but they did like nya yeah yeah.
Oh,
like
no.
It's like a weird. No, I don't know. It didn't make any sense.
That's a regional thing.
Man. Well, bonk is not, I mean, they didn't make up the word bonk. I mean,
right.
That's
I've never
not
been
new.
Bunked on the head.
No, nobody bunked any, unless you hit somebody with a, like, bunk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Right.
Like,
or the character Bunk from The Wire, maybe, like, jumped on your face.
You've been bunked.
That was his prank show.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was, bunk bunk. And then I was surprised at how late that stuff comes in. And it's like, that's my main memory of the episode. Yeah. It's like, no, blah, blah, blah. And like, bunk, bunk on the head and all that stuff. I'm like, oh, that's not it for like a half hour, like at least.
Yeah, sort of even longer, right?
Yeah.
It felt like it came in the third act or the last act of the show. I was like, wait, where is all this stuff? My memory of this show is completely wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, as far as the order of things, I definitely thought a lot of this stuff came much earlier in the episode.
Yeah.
Than it does. It takes forever to get what's kind of fun about the episode is all these weirdo kids. You know, it's like the thing I remember being kind of not cool about it, but at least something weird and interesting in a in a morbid sort of way. But otherwise it's just Kim Darby, a lot of Kim Darby with weepy face.
Mm-hmm.
And she does a fine job. I'm not saying
she does a great job.
She's actually pretty good. It did take, I looked at her and I went, man, I really did have to think about who she was for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And then realized I'd seen True Grit with my dad like 20 times when I was a kid. And I don't know why it took me so long to figure it out. But she grown up quite a bit by the time she makes True Grit. So
she had two credits as an adult that blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Just that she's the mom.
Teen
Wolf 2. No, not even. She's the mom from Better Off Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Franch Dressing. Franch Fries.
Wow.
And she was in a movie that maybe, I don't know if any of you guys know it. It was a TV movie, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, which I'm almost the same age as everybody, but like my exact generation from like maybe my town or something all shared the same deep fear of that movie. I'm sure it's incredibly stupid and non-scary, but if you happen upon it on TV as a kid, it will ruin you for a year or so.
Hmm.
So like little creepy goblin things living in the walls or something.
I hadn't thought about her in a while until Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood came out. And it was sort of all this like offshoot reading about all the different people and the characters, real or fictional, in the movie. But Timothy Oliphant's character that he plays in the Western show that Leonardo DiCaprio guest stars in is was James Stacy, who was married to Kim Darby and has a really, really messed up story, you guys. Like, it's funny because once I learned about him, then I rewatched the movie and realized that he has him sort of take off on a motorcycle at the end. It's a total Tarantino thing to do because James Stacy was hit by a drunk driver on a motorcycle, lost his left arm and left leg.
Oh, God.
So, you know, Tarantino was like morbid. It was like a weird joke or something to have him ride off in a motorcycle, I think, at the end of that scene. But then he went on to have, I'm going to let the listeners look this up for themselves. I'm not going to tell them what criminal activity he took part in that came at the end of his life. But it wasn't good. It's really messed up and not even funny. I don't know why I'm laughing. But anyway, she was married to him. And I thought that was kind of interesting. I think they have a couple of kids. Had a couple of kids together, too.
Hmm.
But James Stacy from Lancer, the TV show.
Hmm.
Yes.
Hmm. There's a lot. Let's dig into cast stuff, I guess, because we meet Miri. We talk a lot about Miri. And she's
the episode named after her.
Yeah, it's named after her. Shortest episode title in the original series. The only one in italics for some reason.
Weird.
Miri. Maybe. Who do we have? So we got Miri. We got Michael J. Pollard.
Yes.
Michael J. Pollard.
I have a bunch of info about him, too.
I was trying to figure out who was... he's definitely older than Kim Darby. Kim Darby was about 20, or almost 20, I think, at the time. She was like 19. Mm-hmm. But
really?
He was like...
In this episode?
Let's see. She was
God,
born...
I would have thought she was younger.
Well, they do a good job of making... Let's see. Mm-hmm. This is... they filmed this in 66. She was born in 47. So she was 19.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Michael J. Pollard was born in 39. And so he was, Pollard's character in Miri was scripted to be between 14 and 15 years of age, yet Pollard himself was 27 years old at the time. despite such a vast difference in age, his baby face looks had earned him the role.
Yeah.
They considered him for Charlie. We talked about that, I think, but in Charlie X. But...
Oh, he would have been... He'd have been really weird as Charlie.
Yeah,
I think he's a little. There's something about Michael J. Pollard. He really works in certain roles. I don't know if he has range, and I don't think it's his fault. I'm not saying he doesn't have the talent to have the range. His face makes it difficult to see him differently than. But an interesting thing about him that I learned a few years ago from my dad was. My dad and I were watching Bonnie and Clyde, which was his biggest role, I think, of his career. He got an Oscar nomination for it. And my dad said, you know, that guy was like a weird phenomenon back then. I was like, what do you mean? And he said, I used to see stickers on like light poles of his face all over town. There were like he's like, it's his face and then like the psychedelic imagery around it. And I was like, why? He's like, I don't know. It was a weird hippie, a weird hippie thing. And I said, okay. And then I decided to look it up. And what it was there was a sort of satirical parody kind of movement for Michael J. Pollard for president at the time. And for the 1968 election. And there was a song by a guy named Jim Lowe called Michael J. Pollard for President. And basically it was this sort of hippie satire parody about how none of these politicians are any good. You know, my kind of guy is Michael J. Pollard. I don't know why. It's like, or he's as good as any of these schmucks. You know, I don't know what the idea was. But even here in Kansas City, my dad said there was pictures of Michael J. Pollard all over town. And I thought that was really strange. Wow. I never heard anything like it, but it was a real thing. I think the whole thing kind of just lost it. We might all know about it had Kennedy not been shot. Robert Kennedy. Oh, yeah. Apparently it was like that song was starting to trend up the charts even.
Right.
And then Kennedy got shot. Well, it's not funny anymore. Yeah. You know, so
like Jim Lowe and Von Meter like sharing a beer.
Von
like,
Meter and Jim Lowe. Like Kennedy's killed my career.
We could have been something. Yeah.
Who really killed my career? The Kennedys, but who really killed the Kennedys? I don't. It's just a circular thing.
That's a new. It's like a heist movie. You got Jim Lowe and Von Meter and a couple of other people trying to get back at. They're trying to figure out who killed JFK so they can get back at them for killing their career, isn't they? yes, Michael J. Pollard. He's in a bunch of stuff. You recognize him if you see him. Apparently, that's the. I had just read that. That's the. You know, Michael J. Fox. His real middle name is Andrew, but he adopted the J as a tribute to Michael J. Pollard.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's fun.
I didn't know that until I just read it earlier. Hmm. There's another guy who you've seen. Well, first of all, native of the planet that we see, who looks kind of like hard to describe. He looks kind of like
I got one.
A rotting monster man?
Bruce Valanche from Omega Man?
There you go. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's what I wrote.
That works.
He's just listed as boy creature.
Ew.
And I forgot about that part. And so I was watching this with my son, and it was just kind of like a creepy, like, oh, sorry. Yeah, I forgot that. But that was played by Ed McCready, who's like not a kid at all. He's like a, you know, 40 something year old. Let's see. He was born in 1930. So when they filmed this, he was like 36. And we saw him in Dagger of the Mind. He was one of the inmates. We'll see him going on further as a not a Nazi in Patterns of Force and Spectre of the Gun.
I thought I recognized him.
You know where else we've seen him?
Where's
in multiple
that?
Episodes of Columbo.
Hey!
We haven't got to talk about Columbo in a while, but we've already talked about how he was in Columbo, I think, during the Dagger of the Mind episode.
And we got John Megna.
Yeah, John Megna. Who is such a, like, I don't know, like...
Well, ugly kid.
I'm sad that they don't make kids like this anymore. Like, a little bit off and have that, like, hey, he told you this. They have this, like, you know, that voice doesn't... Like, they were all over, you know, like, Kenner commercials and stuff when we were a kid. But now, like, they don't make these anymore. And it's disappointing.
He had a weird... he had a nice career going for him as an adult, too. Like, he's in a couple of Burt Reynolds movies, which means you're a star.
Yes.
He was in he played the punk leader in Policewoman, which means I have to buy Policewoman the series now.
Sure.
And, you know, started off pretty much as Dill in To Kill a Mockingbird. So he basically played a child version of Truman Capote. Dill?
God, yeah. I knew. Wow. I knew who that kid was.
My Lord, Aunt Stephanie almost gave me a heart attack.
I even looked at him. I don't know how I missed that credit, because I was like, I know that kid. And then I'm reading about it. I'm like, I just don't, what do I know him from? And I gave up on it. But that's clearly, obviously, it's Dill now. You say it. It's so bizarre.
He was born in Ozone Park, Queens. Look at that.
Hey.
Wow.
Spitting the Queens distance boy. From my hometown.
I wonder, he's the son, his father was Ralph Magna, a pharmacist. My grandfather was a pharmacist in Queens around the time that this guy was born.
Maybe they hated each other.
Yeah, they fought. Man.
Competitors.
He was, he's a half-brother to Connie Stevens.
Huh.
Wow.
Wait, what? Because James Stacy was also married to Connie Stevens before Kim Darby.
Wait a minute.
So is there some connection here?
Oh, and Joe, he went to Holy Cross.
Huh. I know a lot of obnoxious people who went to Holy Cross.
Yeah. Let's see. How is he? It doesn't say how he's related to. Weird. I mean, other than it says that he's half-brother of Connie Stevens and an ex-brother-in-law of Eddie Fisher.
Which makes him an ex... related
both
to Carrie Fisher,
singers.
Which means
yeah,
it gets a little too.
And she and Bill Shatner debated Star Trek and Star Wars together. It's a whole thing.
Well, and William Shatner's daughter is among this group, correct? Somewhere in this, yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how he's related to all these people, and it doesn't say.
It's just a weird coincidence that
yeah,
it's in the scenes with Kim Darby, who was married. Oh, anyway,
yeah. But yeah, we get uncredited co-stars are aplenty. Stephen McAveedy. McAveedy might sound familiar. Why would it sound familiar? Because this episode was directed by Vincent McAveedy.
Oh. Mm.
That is not his son. It's his nephew, I think.
Oh.
And that's the one, the kid that we see with like the kind of
mask.
Like half,
the gorilla mask.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thanks for putting me on TV, Uncle Vincent.
Yeah, just hide your ugly mug.
Aw.
And apparently he works for Mel Gibson.
He's a good person.
He worked on Braveheart, What Women Want, and The Passion of the Christ.
Yeah. Part of the solution.
Yep.
And
Tom, what the
what?
Maybe I read too much into that, but knowing what I know about Mel Gibson, I wouldn't use the word solution.
It was a twist on part of the problem, but a sarcastic twist.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I immediately go real dark when I think about Mel Gibson. I'm sorry.
Oh no, yeah.
Well, that man has had his struggles.
Well, I read a book I read a book by Joe Esterhaas, the screenwriter, about his time trying to write a movie with Mel Gibson. Mm. And I already thought Mel Gibson was a bastard. And then I read that book. I was like, oh, my God, he's way worse than I even thought. Anyway, sorry.
I'm reading this in the background as we go, and I because it's hard to keep track. I didn't want to write down. I'm like, oh, this person.
Right.
When Pollard goes in, we can call him John, but it's John spelled like Jan, like J-A-H-N.
I am. Mm-hmm.
Like he's from Philadelphia or something. when he goes in to steal the communicators, from our Star Trek people, the Enterprise crew on the planet. He's got two little kids with him. That is John Dweck and Scott Dweck.
Oh, the Dweck boys.
Yes, the Dweck brothers are the two children of Grace Lee Whitney.
Huh.
Oh, look at that.
And then he is all Scott Dweck. I don't think John Dweck. He's a science teacher. Scott Dweck appeared also. This was his first appearance. His second appearance was as a Vulcan crew member in Star Trek the Motion Picture, in the big briefing scene where like everybody and their mother who had ever been a fan of Star Trek or related to Star Trek was in the, was in the rec room.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned out to be an airline pilot. And in a weird connection, he used to take Christopher Reeve for his annual pilot renewal test.
Oh, wow.
So, we also have, let's see, the Morris children.
They're the children of Morris, the cat from...
Yeah, the finicky cat.
Yes. I assume so.
Oh, I guess, do they not have... Oh, I thought she was related to somebody. Well, anyway, this is Iona Morris and Phil Morris are the two. There's boy in hat or something like that, who's Phil Morris.
Wait, is boy in hat the kid with the Sherlock Holmes hat on? The one kid that has like maybe the Sherlock Holmes he had on.
Oh, could be. Oh, no, no. Phil Morris is boy in army helmet. Sorry.
Girl. Okay.
Iona Morris is girl with hat. Who, if you look, she's kind of dark skinned with like a sparkly hat, like a sequined hat on. Iona Morris first was in Miri. And then she kept popping up. They both actually keep popping up in Star Trek. She was a character named Umali in Voyager. And her brother Phil Morris was on Voyager also at some point. Oh, here we go. They're the children of Mission Impossible star Greg Morris. And it's like, I knew there's somebody's kid. For some reason, they chose to remember. This is why I love Memory Alpha. They went to the same high school as Corbin Burnson. Because Memory Alpha is like, you know what's important here? That we tell you how this is related to Corbin Burnson, because he was in a Trek thing once. She was, like they both kind of kept acting in random stuff throughout their lives. So Iona Morris was the original voice of Storm on the 90s X-Men cartoon. And in the Spider-Man animated series, which I guess there was a little crossover episode with them.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And it says that she returned to RoboCop at some point, which I'm assuming meant that she was once before.
Well, they were married.
Yeah.
Like they, you know, they were estranged for a while, but you know.
And she was Claudia Grant in Robotech.
Oh, wow.
Huh. I love that. Okay. Well, I can't find anything about Robotech. Oh, so she returned to Robotech, not RoboCop. There you go.
I see.
That's why. Okay. I was misreading it. But the... And then Phil Morris was in a handful of things. He was in, like I said, Voyager. He was in... he was also on Babylon 5, which is a weird crossover thing. His best known role is lawyer Jackie Chiles on Seinfeld.
Oh my God. Oh, wow. Are you kidding me?
That's amazing.
Oh my gosh. That's super weird.
That doesn't mean anything to me, but.
Well, he's supposed to be Johnny Cochran. Yeah. Almost exactly.
And he spreads out over several seasons. He's in a lot
all
of
all the way
episodes.
To the last episode.
Yeah,
he's in the
last
final episode. Yeah. Anytime Kramer needs a lawyer, he hires Jackie Chiles. And it is, he's really good. He's really good.
He was the voice of Vandal Savage on the Justice League cartoons.
Oh,
and
sweet.
He took over for he played the recurring role of Martian Manhunter on Smallville.
Martian Manhunter was in Smallville?
I guess so.
Because I know he was in Supergirl, but I didn't know he was in Smallville.
Hmm. Oh, so look at he was in Miri. He's got a lot of crossover. You totally recognize, I recognize his picture here. He's Cadet Foster in Star Trek 3, which if you look at him, I'm like, oh, okay. I think I know that guy.
Oh, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah. So he's in Miri, he's in Star Trek 3. He's in two different episodes of Deep Space Nine. Once as a Klingon and once as a, some kind of third Ramata clan. And then he was on Voyager playing Lieutenant John Kelly, who looks like a human character for once. So he really spread out over the Treks and had a lot of other things going on. I found that this group of kids is much more rewarding than the group of kids from And the Children Shall Lead, which was just kind of like, one or two people that we had.
Well,
the one.
To be fair, the guy from the Japanese guy from Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah.
And the guy who invented the sound at the beginning of Star Trek, the motion picture.
Oh, that's right.
Mm. Right. Yeah.
A feature. That's a big
blaster
deal.
Beam.
That's pretty cool.
Mm.
And he taught Greg Brady how to smoke.
Yeah. I don't know how these kids got the part. Darlene Roddenberry and Don Roddenberry.
They just snuck out of the set, I guess.
No idea.
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, just went to a local elementary school.
Yeah.
And then Shatner's kid is in there somewhere, but Nimoy would not let his kids be in the show, correct?
Oh. Right.
They read that somewhere.
Dawn Roddenberry played a dirty-faced girl in a flowered dress. It sounds so... Here you are, you're just a dirty-faced girl in a flowered dress. And she... Oh, wow. Dawn was also in... she was a nameless girl in Pretty Maids All in a Row.
Ooh.
Hmm, which is weird.
Don't let your daughter in that movie, Gene. Yeah. Dirty movie.
And then, let's see. We don't have... Oh, Darlene Roddenberry was... Darlene Roddenberry looks a little bit older here. Well, I guess she would be like... She was probably about 20 at the time. She didn't... it seems like she didn't do that much else acting-wise. She was a Reno, Nevada real estate agent, which makes me not want to read anymore. No offense to people in Reno or real estate agents, but when you mix the two together, I'm just like, I don't know. Yeah.
We started at Star Trek and then we got here.
Yeah. Irene Sale plays Louise. So the girl who kind of jumps out, she's been infected. She jumps on Kirk's back for a little while and it's kind of creepy.
Mm-hmm.
She's an actress and stunt woman who's been in a handful of things. We've seen her around a bit. Another one, an adult playing, I guess you have to, you know, if you're going to have people that Captain Kirk is like punching and throwing and stuff, you got to have them.
Although he's tossing around John Megna or whatever his name is.
Right. Yeah.
It was kind of uncomfortable. Like, wow, you're really throwing that kid around, dude. Like,
cut it out. Little brunette girl in black lace dress and little girl in red striped dress are Leslie and Lizbeth Shatner.
Oh.
One of whom I assume was the yeoman in Star Trek V, who gives Bill Shatner a, like, you know, notepad or something.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
I can't remember what character Bill Shatner played. I just know he was in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at her book. Somewhere. Lizbeth Shatner is the one. Lizabeth? It's like Elizabeth without the E.
Mm-hmm. Lizbeth.
But there's an A in there, too. It's like Liz. It should be Lizbeth, but it's Lizabeth. Or Elizabeth.
I pronounce it Lizabeth. That's what he said to his wife when she was born.
Yeah.
When he says that to the kids, we'll get there in a second, too. He says that to the kids in this one, too.
It sickens me.
Lizbeth is the one that he picks up when he's... You know, the one with like the kind of tuxedo shirt almost and mm-hmm. and green pants that he picks up when he gets the communicator and he's talking to the. She's the one who helped him write Captain's Log, making of Star Trek V, etc.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. I have that book somewhere.
And she's married to Andy Clement, who's the guy who. He does a bunch of like makeup stuff and special effects stuff and interesting. Unknown performers is a handful of other girls and people that we don't know who they are or what they do, whose kids they were, mm-hmm. who showed up that day. We didn't. I think that's all. We have. We mentioned briefly Farrell, played by Jim Goodwin. Who seems very confused and perplexed. And he was in three episodes. He was in Mudd's Women, Enemy Within, and Miri. So we have one more Farrell coming up.
Oh, good.
Let's keep an eye out for him. And so you mentioned Shatner's pronunciation thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed it during the... the scene where the kids are all swarming around him, the part that I remember being most of the episode, which turned out to only be, where the kids are all swarming around him and they're, you know, after they've captured Yeoman Rand and they're doing their whole thing. And Kirk is like, listen, you're all going to die. And they're like, blah, blah, blah. They say blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
And he says, no, blah, blah, blah.
No, and like, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it is blah, blah, blah. But the kids are saying blah, blah, blah.
He's correcting them.
He's like, no, blah, blah, blah.
Well, children want to be told right from wrong.
Yeah
exactly.
Kids are so dumb.
Yeah.
But it's funny because I do say, as I said, I think I mentioned this in a teaser of this episode, that I say to my kids, like, no, no, blah, 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 that kind of a thing. And bonk, bonk on the head.
Yeah.
When I said it, I was like, oh, have I been saying it wrong for years? Is it blah, blah, blah?
It's also not bunk, bunk.
It's
we're
bunk,
right,
bunk.
They're
I'm
wrong.
Gonna...
We're right, yeah.
I've got a couple of... let's see. There's a moment where it's like you hear like somebody radios, but it might even be the aforementioned Farrell. Somebody calls down to Spock and they're like, "Hey, here are those figures you asked for. 12." Mm-hmm. Like, and then he like goes off into a couple of other things, but it's not like it seems like an odd like oh yeah, we ran those numbers for you. 47, 6, and 3.
Right.
Like, and it's like, okay,
wait, do you have
a pen?
You have a pen, right?
And he punches them into that early 80s cable box.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, there's a button for 12.
It's like, oh, why am I watching 46. HBO now?
He's got to hit the two numbers at once so he can get the scrambled channels.
That's right, if he's lucky.
That part made me laugh. Another part that made me laugh is they're all being very serious when after they've developed, in a short period of time, they've developed a potentially effective... we're going to say cure. They say vaccine a lot. One of my notes is vaccines don't work like that. Which, you know.
Vaccines are preventative.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They should have just been called an antidote.
Yeah. Antidote or a cure or some other thing. But they say vaccine in a way that makes it like, you know, and you've not to bring it too much into current events, but you've heard tales of, people who are anti vaccine who then on essentially
what, really?
Their essentially on their deathbed they're like, oh, like I was wrong, give me the vaccine, and then they have to be told like vaccines don't work like that, like you've already you got it, and they're thinking this, they're like, give me the vaccine, and slowly it won't
turn into like rotting monster people on the other on the exact replica of Earth that was in Miri.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an evergreen pop culture reference.
So, Peter, are you suggesting that this episode may have killed people?
That's a bit strong.
Giving them
saying.
The wrong idea about vaccines?
I'm saying, let's understand.
As a kid, I saw Miri, and
I thought I knew how it worked.
But when they're developing this quote-unquote
trusted
vaccine,
bones.
They're like, well, we figured it out, but we just don't know the dosage. And it's like, yeah, it could save our lives. And then I think Spock turns and he's like, or it could be a beaker full of death.
Beaker full of death.
Wow. I had to write down beaker full of death. And I wasn't sure. Yeah, exactly.
That was the line of dialogue I wrote down myself. I have to say, this may be our Shatneriest episode ever. Like, yeah. Shatner's making, like, he's not even making a meal. He's making a feast.
Yeah, like, just last week, John was saying that maybe Metamorphosis was the go-to, or one of the go-to,
Shatner
you
want to
see your stereotypical Shatner, that's where you go. But gosh, this would make a nice side dish. Yeah.
And the episode was very directed. So just having force protective shots of his arms coming out toward the camera.
Yeah, that was weird. Yeah.
Yeah. McAvity, he's trying some things here.
Yeah.
And I love him for it. I found this episode a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I did want to say one choice that I really liked that I can't remember it happening quite this way ever on any other episode was Kirk walking into that doorway and we get the theme. We get the dun, 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 dun.
Oh,
I was like, holy shit,
Kirk
that's like Indiana Jones moment. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah.
Our hero.
I loved it. It was a hero moment. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He should have, like, if only he had a thing, but like, this is Kirk or something like that. If he had an identifying thing.
Yeah.
And that's what I call warp factor smooth. Dun, dun, dun. Like, hey. Yeah. He needs he needs more catchphrases.
Mm-hmm.
I got worried because I was reading the background stuff and it said Adrian Spies is a great name who wrote this episode. Adrian Spies wrote Miri and which was heavily reworked by Cara Bastos. Formerly a reporter and feature writer for the New York Mirror, built a long career writing for television. Also wrote for Wagon Train, Untouchables, Defenders, Hawaii 5-0, Police Story. Maybe you could find a Police Story crossover there. Weren't you talking about just...
Was it Magna was on it or something?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Magna played the punk leader on, an episode of Police Woman. Yeah.
Oh, Police Woman.
All right, well. I looked. I didn't see any Columbos in Adrian Spies writing.
Trust me, I would have found the Columbos.
The Danny Thomas Hour. There, I was worried because it says an Adrian Spies original script featured a much closer relationship between Kirk and Janice Rand. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's like a little bit worried.
This episode does have the feel of something that has been worked over and worked over and worked over.
Yeah, it's a bit chewed.
Yeah, it had, like, as I was saying earlier, it has, you know, hats upon hats upon hats upon, like, other hats with some wigs, too. But it also has things that's like, okay, you got the whole idea of the duplicate Earth that nobody mentions again. You have, you know, Kirk makes his impassioned speech to convince the children not to act like children.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then the next scene, they're just walking, you know, they're just walking with Kirk. There's no like, okay, you know, I agree with you, Captain Kirk.
You win, like adult.
Miri's sort of, and maybe I missed something because like family was walking through the room or something like that. But like, it feels like there's that one scene where Miri may be a double agent. Where she refers to, you know, Kirk as Mr. Lovey-Dovey, and she seems to be in on it with John and the other kids.
I think
she
was.
She was, and then... She saw Kirk and Rand being close. Not close in quotes, but just, you know, actually, like, you know, they were being grown-ups who cared for each other. Again,
so that's the hook that I missed. That's the hook I guess I missed.
So she got all upset about that and ran back to the onlys and was like, let's get him.
But for literally one scene.
Right. It was a quick turnaround.
And there's and there just seemed to be a lot of filler, a lot of like, how long are we going to work on this vaccine? How long are we going to, you know, like play around with the fact that they're getting angry with each other? So it seemed that like story points that would have been good to explore were kind of abandoned, and story points that weren't that interesting, they decided to utilize 10 minutes of episode time for.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's this point in the episode that's kind of interesting. It's almost interesting. They're about to be interesting. Where Spock is saying to Kirk, hey, you should go cozy up to Miri because she likes you already. And if you get closer to her, then she'll, you know, we can get in with the kids and get our communicators back, whatever. And Kirk walks off with Miri, and they're kind of like, there's definitely like a lovey-dovey vibe to it. And Rand's got this look on her face, and she turns to Spock, and I think it's going to be like, should you really be pushing them together? Like, is that cool? Is that appropriate? That's like really weird. I'm kind of creeped out by this, by our captain walking off with this girl like this. But instead it's a look of like, oh wow, she's really 300 years old. Yeah. Spock's like, think about it. And you're kind of like, oh, that's not what I thought that was going to be.
So we've been kind of dancing around. We don't really lean into the, we haven't really addressed the total creepiness of it, that this basically like,
and
a lot of
the
crux of the episode is that there's a young woman who is got a crush on Captain Kirk, and he kind of uses that to his advantage a little bit, and like it's a weird, and he does make a point of saying like, hey, she's 300 years old, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, that's not
which is the science fiction version of she looked 18.
Right.
Exactly. It's legal somewhere.
I don't know.
Romulus.
I don't know what I had forgotten about that. But like I'd really forgotten about the kind of that subtext and the actual kind of like infected people jumping out every once in a while, like the jump scares of like and those are kind of things that I didn't like, but I remembered. There's other parts that I did like that I hadn't remembered from last time. I felt like it was a much drier. I mean, I guess just because bits and pieces of this and then the Children Shall Lead get mixed into my head into one. Yeah, the one with the kids.
Oh, yeah.
And I think this is certainly much better than that episode. At least just because more stuff happens and it's more dynamic. There's fewer attorneys, but yeah, it was a little bit of a mixed bag because I was like, there were things that I didn't remember that I now liked and things I had forgotten about that I now didn't like as much. So I was like, oh yeah, that I know. Yeah, that was bad. So overall, I don't know. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
I like that Rand is in this one a lot. She's like part of the gang. She's like part of the team.
It's the only time she's ever off the Enterprise, I believe, in her few episodes.
She's the whole time looking for the coffee machine. She's just so confused.
Yeah, how is anybody getting their coffee up on the Enterprise? That's
I don't
want to
think about it.
That well, maybe
they're all like sleeping the entire time.
I was going to say it's before metamorphosis, because after metamorphosis, maybe it's... they got to vice commissioner, whatever, is making coffee for them. Right.
But I'm a commissioner. Yeah, but you still got to get the coffee.
You're right next to the machine, lady. Come on.
Maybe it's the other, you know, I always like to see that other yeoman pop up. There's another yeoman in there.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we can just imagine that somewhere, like, it's the other thing. There's no, it's season one, so there's no Chekhov, but there's no Sulu, there's no Scotty, there's no Uhura in this episode. Like,
yeah,
what are they off doing?
Right.
You know,
making
are they
their
on
own coffee?
Different
at
mission?
Costco,
are they
getting the coffee.
Yeah.
Beans.
They've got to go through, like, they've got, like, you know, mandatory, like, sensitivity training things that they have to go through. Some, like, HR stuff that they have to, like, sit through and, like, oh, like, oh, here are the new packets for the new health insurance programs. You guys got to watch this PowerPoint. And they're like,
oh, man.
They set their space email automatic response thing to, no, I'm in a thing. I'll get back to you on Thursday.
But yeah, I don't know what, I don't know what to make of this overall. I think I enjoyed this episode.
I partially do. I like a lot of it.
I like Bonk Bonk on the Head. I mean, obviously, Bonk Bonk on the Head is just a fun thing to say and to hear.
It is just fun.
Yeah.
And
to hear
the actual
like, no,
bonking
bonk
on the head.
Yep.
No, I mean, there's actual bonk bonking, which is kind of fun.
I like the makeup. I like Shatner's making a feast out of this. And Michael J. Pollard is having a lot of fun here. He kind of reminds me of like a Corman film biker leader.
Yeah.
We want to be safe.
Seems to be what they're going for, but it's...
He's real crafty.
It's a little early for them to be riffing off the Corman biker.
No, I mean, it is. You're right. No, it is early, but it has that kind of vibe to it, you know?
No, for sure. That's what's kind of weird about it. It's like, wait, did Corman go say that Michael J. Pollard look is what we should be going for?
Maybe they're
somebody
doing,
get
know,
that
like...
exact jacket. You want us to buy some No, I want you to go get that exact jacket.
I just watched West Side Story not too long ago, and it had a little bit of he had a little bit of a riff vibe. So maybe that's.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
Maybe he was playing off that in his head. Because, you know, when you're an Owen Lee, you're an Owen Lee all the way.
My wife said, why does he keep sticking his finger in his mouth? I'm like, I don't know. It's an acting thing. We don't understand. He's an artist.
He has a lot of tics. I mean, when you watch Bunny and Clyde.
Right.
He's in this movie called Between the Lines, a Joan Micklyn Silver movie called Between the Lines. And he's kind of like a one-man Greek chorus. He's like out on the street selling newspapers, and it's a story about an alternative weekly newspaper. And he's just really, really, you're not sure if he's supposed to be totally off. You know what I mean? Like, is there something wrong with this guy? Or is it just Michael J. Pollard face, you know, and ticks?
And Michael J. Pollard face. Get over here.
But he's still around, right?
No,
died in 2019.
Yeah.
Really?
I was going to say, just not too long ago, I think.
Maybe, that maybe now I kind of remember that.
Yeah.
He was still acting well into the 90s, at least, right?
If anybody ever gets a chance, see the movie Hannibal Brooks, where Oliver Reed and Michael J. Pollard play Allied prisoners of war in Germany who are forced to work at the, for argument's sake, Munich Zoo. And long story short, Oliver Reed has befriends an elephant, hence the name Hannibal Brooks. And this elephant will help him defeat many German soldiers.
Wow.
So
it
so
sounds
anytime,
like, it, like yeah. you just did like a fake pitch from a movie. Like there's a scene in the movie where you're pitching and you just well, you just pull that out. But
yeah.
And then anytime somebody brings up Oliver Reed, like, OK, he was in Oliver Reed. I don't think about the movie. I immediately think about them drinking together later that night. So now I have the amazing image of Oliver Reed and Michael J. Pollard like trading shots at a bar.
With an elephant. Yeah.
I just want to see one moment in time where Michael J. Pollard and Oliver Reed are talking to each other drunk.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I feel like it'd be highly entertaining.
Total side note, but I was reading a book about the music of James Bond. This book called The Music of James Bond.
Oh, yeah.
And aptly titled.
It's
Wait, what's it about then?
Weirdly, it's about this elephant, see? But yeah, they go into a little bit of like this, basically this scene where like John Barry was hanging out with, you know, Michael Caine and Terrence Stamp and these other guys. And it just makes it seem like, wow, like this whole crazy, like, you know,
that's awesome.
Like Michael Caine and Terrence Stamp got like kicked out of their apartment that they shared for a while, which was like an infamous like party apartment. And that's why they got kicked out. And then one of them was staying on like John Barry's couch for a little bit. And lots of other people get involved, and it's like every once in a while, like a famous name pops up, and he's like, "Oh yeah, because he was, you know, married to so and so, who was sleeping on Terrence Stamp's floor," and it's like, "Oh, okay."
Richard Harris climbs through the window in the middle of the night. It's that kind of stuff. Yeah, that swinging '60s drinker guys.
Yeah,
man, I don't know how they didn't all die in the '60s.
Right,
like it's amazing to me.
Anyway, speaking of things that died in the '60s, Miri.
Star Trek.
Yeah.
Wait, yeah. Hang on.
Nobody ever really did anything with that property. It's really weird.
No, yeah. It's.
I know that this, when I went to look for it, I'm like, Miri, okay, that's season one-ish. I know where it's, you know, it's somewhere near, I think, you know, court martial. And, but. It doesn't feel, I mean, I guess it feels like a first season episode in that they're finding their footing a little bit, but it feels almost like more of a third season episode in that they're finding their footing because they're losing their footing, and not they're finding their footing as in they're finding it. Like their feet are slipping, and it feels like it's going off a little bit instead of going on. But that being said, again, I think I still enjoyed this episode. It was a weird. Is a dichotomy where I know, like, okay, there's things that are wrong that I don't like about this, but I'm enjoying it still, and I find it very watchable. There's Star Trek things happening.
It's fun acting, you know. It also, because it's not that this is necessarily a good or bad thing, but because it's not Enterprise-centric, because it's a very open episode, well, technically, because really most of the episode they spend in the laboratory.
Right.
But, like, it has its own unique feel to it. Like it's not really an episode you kind of that gets jumbled in with a bunch of other episodes.
Just the one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's not the best, but it's not like it's light years ahead of the alternative factor.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, everything is.
Yeah. And also like Cat's Paw. I mean, it's much better.
Yeah. Yeah. I would never put this in with those. It's not lower. It's not the lowest of Star Trek by any means. But, I mean, Tom was talking earlier about a point where it almost got interesting. And there's another point where it almost was like where it got me for a second. Like, I was like, ooh, I'm on board with this moment. And that's when Spock and the two security guys are running around and things are happening. And then they're in that alley and the children, like the chanting, it's real loud. It's like, whoa, that's creepy. Like, and then it cuts back to Kirk and everybody. And I'm like, oh, nice cut. Because now I'm like, what the hell's going to happen with Spock? But then Spock just walks in the damn room.
Heard some kids.
And it's like, oh.
Yeah. Well,
and he goes, there's lots of children. Like, wait a second. Something should have happened there. Like, something, some kind of, you actually built suspense and then completely took it away.
Right.
And there's a few moments like that where it's like, man, this was so close.
Yeah.
To maybe this is where they put a wig on a hat accidentally and another hat on top of it, and it was like, wait a minute, just leave the hat the way it was. Let's just go with that hat. There's a lot of missed opportunities in here, but overall it does build. I'm interested in the end, and I love that moment. I think it really helps to have a moment where Captain Kirk walks in and the music raises and you're like, there's a hero. It really like carries you along. It's, you can say it's a cheap trick, but it, it works. Nobody's going to make any cheap trick jokes. Sorry.
No, I was trying
sure
to
somebody was going
to
come in.
I know you wanted me to
Spock's
make all right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Spock's all right and Bones is all right. Anyway, sorry.
I wonder how much of the plot had to be like looking. It would be interesting to look at all the rewrites and think about how much of the plot, like what you said would be interesting, except it probably they couldn't bring all those kids out to the location shoot, out to the backlot shoot. They had to have them just on the soundstage because of, you know, child labor laws and just the sheer, you know, act of wrangling, you know, like 20 kids. So I wonder how much of it would be done differently, either, you know, if they had the resources or if they were, or if this were done now, they'd probably figure out a workaround somehow. Or...
Yeah.
I mean, anything could have happened there. I didn't need to see the children attack Spock. I mean, literally, if Spock would have come in, like, dragging a red shirt along with him, who was wounded, that would have been something, you know? But literally, he just walks in like, hey, there's some kids out there.
Or he could have disappeared. He could have gotten really kidnapped.
Or something, yeah. And then we're like, it's a mystery. What's going on? What were those chants? Like, it's almost subverts the mystery when he walks in and just says, hey, there's kids out there.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, well, I was actually thought it was kind of mysterious. I mean, I know there's kids out there.
There's kids acting mysterious.
We don't know exactly what they're like, and we don't know what they're, you know, like maybe if something mysterious happens, it'll further the mystery instead of him just going, kids out there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's kids.
Acting up. Hey, speaking of George Lucas possibly just sitting there watching Star Trek while he's writing this, there's basically a line from Star Wars in this episode. And I kind of forget who says it because all I did was write it down. I think it's Spock. And when he's fighting with McCoy at one point, and he says, bickering is pointless.
He does?
He he literally says, bickering is pointless. That. Yeah.
Wow. Tarkin.
Yeah.
Talking
right
Tarkin.
There. Spock and...
You just see George just like jotting that down. Like, I'm going to use it somewhere. Bickering is pointless.
Oh, bickering is pointless. The theme. Maybe Biggs will say it.
Right.
One of the names on my list
store
of names.
Operator. Yeah.
No, I want to look at it. Yeah. Bickering is pointless. I'll check on the captain's progress. Look at that.
It's exactly what Tarkin says. He checks on the captain's progress.
By the time we get to the end of this show, we're going to realize that Lucas just lifted all of Star Wars from.
Well, it'd be fun to make one of those like supercut things where it's like, you know, you can just take like a bunch of the dialogue from Star Trek and make your own Star Wars out of it.
Yeah, just having Tarkin lip syncing with Spock, saying right. Bickering is pointless. Yeah.
All right. What does that? What do we make of this? Let's put a letter on this.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't you want to give us your the peak grading system?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to.
Is it a grup or a foolie episode? I think you should change for this. It's a total foolie. We haven't even mentioned that at all. That they have those.
Yeah, their own little weird slang bits.
Just like three slang words. They don't go full Anthony Burgess, Clockwork Orange, right. or anything. But it's like, let's give them like two slang words to use.
And, yeah.
I guess it has to be an engineering episode, but for a like, it's got stuff that works. But it seems like we said, it seems like it has been well chewed. So it seems like maybe it's overworked in engineering, but it's not a total failure. And there's stuff that I do like in it, but it's not.
So would it be medical? Do you have one that's like a sick bay? Can sick bay be a category?
Because it's if it needs some help.
It's been overworked to the point of exhaustion and needs to be like resuscitated. Yeah.
They need to scale back the engineering a little bit. It's like a Borg.
It's like Scotty's nephew in Wrath of Khan. No, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. In the original version where we don't see all the.
Oh yeah,
sick bay stuff. Right.
I know. I guess I'm like, am I riding like a? I enjoyed it. I think I'm riding like a. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this. Maybe I'm looking at other things that I graded. I'm riding like a C+ B- line. I think I'm gonna land on a C+ side. Overall. No, that's maybe I'll go B minus. I'm feeling it.
Oh,
I'm feeling it today. I'm gonna go B minus.
I'm going C+. I was right there with you until you
I was riding the line, but then I looked at like the last couple of things that I gave a C plus to, like, you know, Immunity Syndrome and Let That Be Your Last Battlefield. I'm like, I think I like this a little bit more than those. Hmm. And then like I gave a B minus to iMUD. I'm like, that it seems kind of like an iMUD, maybe. I don't know. Maybe it is a C plus. Hmm. I don't know. Card late is a card plate. I'll let it be a C. I'll let it be a B minus for right now.
But yeah,
I think for
me, it has to be in the C's somewhere, because even though there's a lot that I like about it, it's kind of boring. Ultimately, like all the kid stuff I can't handle. I just want to fast forward. Kirk, you know, emoting in front of the kids, like that stuff felt like it went on forever for me, and I really didn't like it.
See, that's what I was expecting it to be boring. And then I felt like it was more, it was less boring than I was expecting this time.
So I kind of agree.
That's why it gets it goes on the B minus side for me.
I love all the Miri stuff and I love her. I think she does a really great job. Mm-hmm. And I like that Rand is around, although she gets kind of underserved. She gets to makes the captain look at her legs.
Look at my legs.
And has a speech about her legs.
They look like big, strong legs, don't they?
Yeah, so I'll say C plus also.
All right.
I'm also in the C plus range. It's, you know, I can't ignore the things that would take it out of the B's. It's a little bit too choppy. Again, they're the hats and wigs.
Yeah.
Yeah. It should lose a letter grade just for the fake Earth thing, the double Earth thing.
Right at the beginning. Forgot about that too. That's completely irrelevant. Unless are they like over explaining? They're like, well, we're going to use the Mayberry set. But let's just say that it's another Earth.
Or just say like, a copy of Earth. That's so silly. Like, just like, it looks like this race developed along the lines of Earth. That's weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. They do that other times.
Right.
Yeah. Why not
do it? Eventually, they're just like, all right. It's like that, like, you know, parallel Earth and time travel. They're just like, we're not even going to explain it anymore. Just come on.
This is the proof. I mean, the concept. Button on the cold open is another Earth, which tells you, like, alarm, alarm. That's what this episode's going to be about.
Yeah.
And it's not. So really, making the cold open so short was kind of a mistake. They should have probably gotten down there.
Gotten to that weird kid.
Gotten to a kid or something. Saw the tricycle or...
Yeah.
That Bones really is like sadly fascinated.
He cares about that.
What it is about that tricycle that really... He just remembers it back in old Kentucky.
Right.
I had a tricycle just like it.
I'll be a teddy bear. Anyway.
My dad had bourbon and branch water on that tricycle.
I did want to talk. Miri's planet is...
Earth. We've discussed this.
No, but, like canonically, I believe it seems like it's called Earth 2. Because...
Think about making a show.
Yeah.
That name.
Depending on how it's, you know, depending on where you're getting your information from, sometimes it's called Earth 2, sometimes it's called just Miri or Miri's planet. Sometimes, and there's all kinds of other apocryphal things like the, and there's a whole, not to mention Memory Beta, where they go back there and then has their own, they have their own name for it and all kinds of crazy stuff. But the Memory Alpha article is for Earth 2, so.
Now, is it pre or post crisis Earth 2?
It's Earth TOO on the moon.
I do kind of want to see a show about Miri and John and the truant officers and the you know, the teachers, and it'd be like a 90210 kind of thing.
By the way, did any of you notice that? Like, well, anybody notice that Kirk explains that he contacted Space Central?
I love it. Yeah, Space Central called. Wait, what? Space Central?
There's that, and there's the whole, like, we were kind of alluded to it before, but the whole, like, the tricorder, they have to talk verbally to people on the Enterprise to get information from the computer. Like, the guy has to, like, read the dot matrix printout from the computer. Like, there's no connection between the tricorders or anything like that. Not to be a nerd about it, but that seems to be a very simple thing that they do in other episodes.
Well.
Yeah, it would be great to go back to the 60s, to 60s sci-fi writers, particularly television, like, yeah, no, this thing fits in my pocket, carries the entire sum of world knowledge, and also I can contact anybody that I want, that I know, you know, by hitting two buttons, you know?
Every once in a while, important news makes it make a noise, and I get annoyed with that.
Yeah,
I get the news delivered to my pocket at the time that it happens, and I get upset with that. I'm just like, shut up.
So all those 60s sci-fi writers would say, so it's a plot killing device,
right.
Like literally makes almost any story impossible to tell. We'd rather just ignore it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Which many of us do. I'm like, I got to set this thing in the 90s, man. Like, I can't, I don't know how to tell this story with phones that exist. There's only so many times you can write, the signal's just not very good around here or whatever. It's like, everything's going to be period pieces.
Or you have, you know, Grace Lee Whitney's kids sneak in and steal the phones.
Yeah.
There you go.
Somebody stole my phone. Every script you write.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hey, speaking of alternate Earths, remember I said there was an episode that I keep thinking is going to be next and it was never next? It's next.
Hey!
Whoa!
It's Mirror Mirror.
I've heard of it.
Mirror. But yeah, that's one of those that I'm like, I kept thinking like M's. Sorry, we got to be almost at Mirror Mirror. And then there are all these other M's. And now we're. And it's not the last M.
Series.
Yeah. Not the last M, but it's the next M. The penultimate M. But stick with us. We'll be back with that next week. We will. We've been putting the occasional thing up on our Patreon page, ABC Devo Patreon, which is available at abcdtos.com/Patreon. We reconverted the ABC Devo Patreon. You get access to all our old Devo episodes, access to all of our bonus episodes from this. Lots of good stuff there. So if you can support us over there, we appreciate it. Otherwise, we'll meet you back here next week for ABCDTOS. Woo-hoo! Mine!
Bong.
Mine!